Kulturi, an encounter with people of different cultures. Here we are again with another program, Kulturi, and today's guest comes from a very beautiful country and very important country, especially in contemporary history, as regards the fall of communism. I'm referring to Poland, and my guest is Jarosław Mikuczewski, and he is here doing some practical work, but he will return to better or greener pastures perhaps later on. So good morning, Jarosław.
Yeah, good morning.
We are discussing the culture of different countries, as I have told you privately. And the first question I would like to ask you is about values, because values are central to every culture. And the values sometimes don't only vary between one state and another, but sometimes there can be two or three different values in the same political
unit.
True, yeah. So what are the main characteristics or the pillars, if you want, which Polish people consider to be their core values?
The core values. To tell you the truth, I was really surprised, and I found that question not easy to answer, because what might be the core values for my parents, let's say, generation, might not be for the youth right now. I see that we are in the time when the values are changing. So, I think I can say about the three main values. We can say core values, and I hope they are still, you know, present in Polish society. So, first of all, I think the God will be the first, the God.
God.
And God, faith.
Yes.
Let's say the
religion.
The rigid religion aspect. Another will be honor. We prove many times during the communist government, during the Second World War, that honor for our country is something really very special. And you will find on many banners, religious banners, even military banners, you know, those two words, God, honor, and the third one, homeland. So,
what is the word honor in Polish?
We say honor. Oh. Honor. So it's not far from English word, but I think the origin is Latin. So, once again, it will be God, honor, and homeland in this.
In these discussions, we are discovering that although the world is so big and there are so many cultures, certain values have a universal value.
I believe as well, yeah.
For example, the issue of homeland, patriotism, and so on.
Yeah.
This exists in every culture. Now, when we speak of certain countries, of emerging countries, and not even only new emerging countries. Let's take Germany, for example.
Okay.
I mean, they speak of German as a homeland, Uber alles. But still, when you go to Germany, you can feel, and they will tell you, that the Bavarians feel different from the Prussians, and for them, the real homeland is Bavaria. And on the other side, that's what the Prussians think.
Example, Gositans, how
yes,
it is.
I mean, yes. That is also an important distinction. So we are seeing this universal. Religion, it was a major value, I think, in every civilization. With secularization, as you are aware, religion seemed to be moving a bit aside. And honor, And when you speak of religion, Roma, you immediately reminded me of Central Mediterranean culture.
Okay.
Because, as you know, Central Mediterranean, in a sense, in the way as Poland is a religious region, whether it's Christian, whether it's Western Christianity, Catholicism, Eastern Christianity, the Eastern Rites, or the Orthodox Church, or the northern shore of the Mediterranean, you've got the Islamic culture and the Islamic religion. So religion is a pillar of Mediterranean culture, but even honor, especially in certain Mediterranean countries, including Malta, there used to be the crime of honor. You can kill someone because of honor, and the punishment would be lessened for a crime of honor. In Sicily, this was, very, very common. And in fact, there is a book about the culture in the Mediterranean, which is an anthropological book, which is called Honor and Shame. Because honor then brings shame. If you break your honor, it is the same. It is a shame. It is a shameful thing. But let's return to the first value. In sociology, especially in the 70s, there was a great movement, as far as sociology of religion is concerned, which was bent on stressing secularization.
Okay.
Now it seems that we have done the full circle, and we are speaking of de-secularization, that is, the return of religion, and the return of religion in the public sphere. And not only, countries which are less advanced in economic terms, but even in the United States. I mean, everybody is talking now about the American elections, coming elections, and the importance of faith-based vote. However, I must ask you this about Poland. Do you think the process of secularization had hit Poland? You've traveled more outside Poland, so you can compare. Do you think if one goes to Poland, he will be struck by the secularization or not? So suppose I was once in Poland in Warsaw, but I cannot say I know anything about Poland because I was only there for a week. So it's only an impression that I get, in your opinion, have people become very secularized and institutions very secularized?
Before I give you an answer about that question, maybe the thing which might be quite a surprise for our audience, that the time of communism in some way prevent our faith, in a sense that we were struggling with the government. So our faith was a way to keep our identity. So for so many years, nearly 60 years, in our identity, faith played role as a way to be independent, to express yourself. Let's say when communists fall, it was 1989, so we have just 20 years from that time. So it's still, when you see, when you look at the old society, all the people, or my parents' age, they still believe that the faith is something very important. It's a way how they can express their freedom. Of course, now we are open country for, let's say, Western culture. You know, there is no borders. We can travel freely. So even the ideas, the secular ideas came to our country. You will see, I mean, when you go to Poland, most of the youths are like Maltese youth. I don't see, big difference. When I went to Germany, I saw, of course, you could see some extremes, but still we are quite similar. So we like to put a lot of questions. We like to, ask if the church has a right to speak about, certain issues. Even about the presence of church in the politics,
in public life.
In the public life. So we are a bit secular. I have to admit. But somewhere deep, we still are a bit attached to religion. So, yeah, it's like that.
When I was in Poland, I discovered a phenomenon which is... it exists also in Bosnia-Herzegovina, so it belongs to these this area of the country, and perhaps even to the countries which were under communist regimes. As we know, socialization in
yeah.
culture, whether it's religious, secular, political, and so on, is a very necessary and important process. And while I was there, people used to speak to me about academies, the church academies, where people used to gather, and then, I mean, not necessarily academies in the sense of universities, but they are quite particular to these countries. Can you elaborate on this? Because we are not very much accustomed to them. And I know that they were culturally very fruitful, especially uh-huh. in keeping the faith.
I'm not sure if I will be talking about that same thinking.
Perhaps I'm using a different uh-huh. word, but...
We used to have kind of clubs near the church, you know, run by religious, by diocesan priests, by layperson, which were a place when the people were discussing about faith, about politics, about country, and those places were, you know, sort of the last free speech places when you could freely express your mind. And so after communist era, a lot of people you know, from that environment became, you know, politicians, you know, lawmakers, and right now you could see them, you know, as a prime ministers, as a president. So I think those little places, we call them clubs, Christian clubs or Christian faith mm-hmm. clubs, made a big impact for, you know, for the future society. Now I can see it.
Did try to deepen intellectually the religion
oh, yes.
of the common man? I mean,
oh yes, definitely. I mean, it was
an intellectual appeal, not
it,
such a
it was it was yeah
club.
Yeah, it was even it comes as a first thing, rather the meeting of your friend. It was an intellectual, you know, effort to reflect on what is going on right now with our country, how we have to deal with this situation, what should be our resistance, you know, how we can, you know, survive as a country, as a person, as an individual. So definitely, I mean, when we speak about Karol Wojtyła and John Paul II, he was the one who was one of the leader of small Christian clubs, and it was, you know, the place when, and they used to have important books which were, you know, banned in the communist era, and they were not allowed to read, you know, certain books, you know, certain philosophers. So over there you could read, you could discuss about that issue, you know, the faith and justice, you know, the free market, democracy. You know, those topics were forbidden, you know, in a public speech. So those places were as a oaza, you know, in a desert when you can find the water. So they were very important.
What is the place of the family in today's mm-hmm. Polish society? How do people look at the family? Do they, let's use the word, treasure the family, or for them the family ties are being loosened?
Unfortunately, I see that we are going in that direction which you mentioned, the bond are going to lose in a bit. When we talk about family, it's not a main issue. You know, the people are not bothered to talk about the family, the importance which family plays in a society. So, unfortunately, I'm saying that because people are much more interesting to do a career, to build first of all, you know, the comfortable life, and then think about, you know, build a proper family. So No, I mean, compared to Maltese reality, when I came here, I was really struck closeness and relation between family members, you know. The Sunday lunch, you gather together, perhaps the size of island helps you to meet your family, but still I can see that that bonds are very strong, you know, that the relation are very strong. In Poland they are not so strong. I don't know how it was before, but from what my grandmother told me and even my parents, it was different. It was almost like in Malta, but unfortunately, I mean, something is changing.
And about homeland, which were the traditional enemies, so to say, external enemies of Poland?
I mean, traditional enemies. I hope they will not be any longer.
They are all in the Union.
It's not you know, difficult when you see on a time for the Second World. I mean, Germany and Soviet Union, those two our close neighbors from the west and from the east. So it was from the Germany Nazi regime came, and from the Soviet Union communist government came. So, but right now the situation is a bit different. We don't consider any longer them as enemies, you know.
I've read about the Human Development Index, that is the way people are developed, and Hungary seems to be quite highly placed, and it is going up. In fact, it is the 39th place in the world as having good human development situation. Do you attribute this to, in a sense, a legacy of the certain type, all right, with its cruelties and so on, and with its leveling everybody, but definitely under communism many people had at least a house where to live, even if not theirs. I mean, they had free hospitalization. I mean, we're not speaking about the levels because they vary, but again, even if there was communism, we all know that medicine as a science and teaching was quite advanced, and it's still quite very advanced in Poland. So we shouldn't look at the communists as being totally dark, I mean. So do you think this development index, this high development level of development, has also, I mean, communism has had some merits in it, so to say, in putting some good quality in the lives of, apart from liberty, which is the best quality, but...
It's difficult for me to speak about that, because I don't remember well that time, so... but what you mentioned about education, about health service, yeah, those two factors, I can say that they were, you know, very pressure for government. I mean, they tried to train our scholars very well, you know. Even the health service was, you know, very good. But still, I don't know how to explain it very well.
Yes, you've got the famous Jagiellonian University, which is one of universities in the world, and which is quite famous even today. But speaking of, you know, about important people and about intellectuals, I think in this day and age we couldn't ignore the intellectual prowess of Pope John Paul II. Blessed now, he's blessed Pope John Paul II. Do you think his influence in Poland was due, because he was even influential when he lived in Poland, not only when he became a pope, was it the result of his natural charisma, of his artistic tastes, or of his intellect? How would you say? Was he quite respected among intellectuals in Poland before becoming a pope.
So I will put as well a hint of divine providence in what you have said. Yeah, he was he had a bit of artistic soul, but he was very good scholar as well, and he was appreciated as a scholar in Krakow, especially his ethics. He was a theologian, and his discipline mainly it was a ethics. So yeah, we still, when we have when we do our ethics during the philosophy course, we study Karol Wojtyła, his text. So yeah, he was for sure appreciated. I mean, not like say nowadays, because we have to remember that was a time of communist era, so it wasn't allowed to, let's say, glorify people in that way. But still, he was, and even for the foreigners, he was really appreciated.
Do you think that, for example, his dissertation, The Acting Person, will become a classic? I know it is almost out of print because I bought a copy, and it was very expensive because I had to buy a second-hand copy. So that means that that shows its popularity. And I know of his wisdom because when I was in Cambridge, there was a Dominican philosopher who said had the Pope nothing better to do, he would have become as big philosopher as Wittgenstein himself. That was his opinion. Did he influence other philosophers outside the Catholic Church, so to say? Given that there was this religiosity among the people, so in a sense he had a certain appeal also because he was a priest and then he was a bishop and a cardinal.
When we talk about the Polish philosophers, the late person, yes, they did this kind of influence, and I know a few of them. They are very good philosophers, and they always try to quote something from Karol Wojtyła. I mean, his idea of dignity, of personal dignity, his ethics as well. So. Yeah, I don't know how it looks in a broader size, let's say, another country's philosophers. Do they take something from Karol Wojtyła, or they are inspired, you know, by his works? I don't know really how.
Let's turn to something which is the turn to the materialistic thing. Which is the way, I mean, the greatest basis of Polish economy? We know you've got agriculture, you've had the great dockyards and so on.
I think the agriculture would be still the biggest source of incomes. You know, we export a lot of vegetables, a lot of, you know, products, you know, which are food products. For the dockyards, we don't have any longer good one. Unfortunately, a few years ago, our main two shipyards were closed. So I think what we do right now is mainly agriculture.
So mainly is agricultural economy. Basically, it's an agricultural country.
I think so. Yeah, we can say like that.
And talking about agriculture, we'll talk something which is in a sense a product of both agriculture and art. And I'm speaking about food now. What would be the common, so to say, staple food poor people. I'm not speaking about rich people. The common people. Uh-huh. What would be their staple food? I mean, for example, in Maltese, we eat a lot of pasta. We eat baked potatoes. We love pork, and so on. Okay. We love fish. Fish is a eaten thing. When I was younger, I mean, fish was rare, very, I mean, it was something, you see the only small fish, because okay. fishermen weren't not really, have the equipment to fish for, for any big fish, or to go very much away from, from the shore, you know. So, what would be, as far as the complete fish, sure, me, the more important.
Like in Malta, you really like pasta. In Poland, we really like potato, and potato with a pork, you know, with a pork steak. It's kind of traditional meal for the majority of Polish families. So, and as well, first of all, we eat very fat.
You eat?
We eat very fatty. I mean, our diet is very fatty.
Very fatty.
Very fatty. So it's not very healthy. But when you see on our climate,
it doesn't seem not to be, because every uh-huh. Polish person I've seen, they look as tall as anything and as healthy as anything.
That's a miracle. That's a miracle. But yeah, a lot of people. I mean, a lot of my friends, foreign friends. When they visited me, they told me that everything is good, but you know, your diet is very tough. You know, you eat a lot of meat, roasted meat. You know, we don't drink a lot of wine. You know, we are not a wine culture. We are more a beer culture. So it's difficult to keep. You know. Your body in a good shape.
Okay.
Eating.
Thank you very much, because time is really running short. And with this nice taste of Polish beer, we'll end today's program.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.